member.
Yes. So we're lucky at VMRC because we were unlucky for a little while. Joe Cimino, who many of you remember, has left us and gone to New Jersey. And we wish him well, of course, and he will do well. And I'll run into him at the ASMSC, so he'll still be there. So, you know, he had almost 14 years with us, which is a pretty good spell. But we do have a deputy chief, Pat Gear, right here. Pat joined us about 5 weeks ago. And Pat's not a newcomer to Virginia. He spent a number of years, I think 11 or 12?
14.
14. With VIMS. And you've all heard about the trawl survey. Well, Pat was running the trawl survey before he left and went to Georgia and spent 16 years in Georgia. So he's not the new kid on the block by any means. And I think the only difference between what Pat's been doing and what we do is it's a little different playbook, and he's getting used to it. And, you know, we're doing fairly well. I mean, when you look at our fisheries division, we still have one position that we hope to fill. In the past, that was termed the head of the plans and statistics department. So that's our objective, to get that position, because got a lot of younger people that are starting to get the hang of things, but we want to make sure they get the proper supervision, and, you know, that all takes time. So certainly Pat's going to be a big help. You're going to hear from him tonight. I'm going to give you the conclusion of fisheries management, just so you understand it before you even get started tonight. We have met with all the jurisdictions, Potomac River Fisheries Commission, Maryland Department of Natural Resources, and VMRC, met by conference call, went through the winter dredge survey results, which you're going to see in a minute, and everyone is of the mind that there is not a need for any changes to the regulations as they stood for last July 5th through July 4th. That was all backed up by even our two bay ecologists. One's Ron Lipschitz from VIMS, who you know. The other's Tom Miller from the Chesapeake Biological Laboratory, and they were of that mind as well. So when I think of the winter dredge survey that you're going to see the presentation of, it's really sort of an average picture, everything considered, and Pat will go over that. So really the only things that possibly go before the commission are date changes, because we have to update the regulation, the main regulation, for date changes. The other thing is you're going to have a few items tonight to look at, a change possibly for the sanctuary areas, a change which is a legislative change, a bill that came out that's looking at the scrape fishery and looking to have that scrape fishery be able to have hard crabs. And the commission is going to be the body that will look at what the season should be, how much should the bycatch be, those type of questions, which we have had some information from Dan Dyes previously, and I'm sure if he doesn't get on, I'll tell you that information. Hey, Dan, how are you? So we had information from Dan earlier, and Dan, you can chime in because we're going to bring this up now that you're on. We'll bring it up as part of the agenda, which is coming up next. So stay with us. The other thing about coming season is that we're going to have a little bit of discussion tonight on fish pots, and, you know, so we'll see how that goes. But everything from last year will remain the same. It's going to be the staff recommendation to the commission. And if you recall, last year the juveniles were very low, fourth lowest in 28 years at that time. They're better this year. They're not terrific, but we don't manage to get recruitment back into the bay. We try and do some management once the juveniles are part of the overwintering stock. And last year we changed the bushel limits in November. They are lower for the whole month, just like they are in March. That was probably the most substantive change. The other thing, and you know, I know not a lot of you do the peeler fishery, but a few years ago, like 2014, we had the peeler season going from May 1 till September 15th. Then we adjusted it when things got better. 2014 was the year of depletion, when there was only 68.5 million crabs as the spawning age females. And we adjusted it twice. So now we have a season that is April 1 for the peeler gears to October 31. I think that's a good thing. Based on what I've seen over the years, there may be a very few people who say, well, we could do something in March. But, you know, my information and my observation has always been that there's also some problems with green crabs that you don't want to get involved with real early in the spring. So we think that's finally a fair to both sides of the bay, a fair regulation, and that will continue as well. You have any questions about anything that I just mentioned? All right. You're going to hear from Mr. Pat Gear next, I think, is up.
You want to approve the, go for a minute approval?
Yep, sorry, sir. Yep.
No problem. So I think you all grabbed the minutes that we had for three different meetings, or no, four, excuse me. Four. Even more than that. I think I've got...
March and April.
April, February, yeah. May, March.
Four. So we haven't approved those because we didn't have a quorum, but it's apparent that now we have a quorum. So I'd like to approve them. And we've also found out to approve minutes, we don't have to have a quorum for a minute approval.
We have a lawyer tell us that, so we know it's a fact.
We knew that.
You have a permit?
What's that?
Go ahead.
Well, I only have two sets of minutes, so I can't make a motion to approve minutes. I don't only have April and March.
What, Rob, you don't have to have a quorum, but you just got to have a majority?
Nope. The chairman has to ask for approval of the minutes. Once that's approved, that's it.
Okay.
And the reason we had minutes that were held up is we were under the impression that without a quorum, you really
no. Which ones don't you have?
Okay.
I got April and March. You got to look at it and see if there's any corrections going to be made.
All right. Do y'all want to look through them?
This is March. I got that.
It is a February.
I got February. May. Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
If there aren't any changes that need to be made, I'll make a motion that we pass the minutes.
All right.
For February, April, March, and May. If there's no corrections that need to be made.
Second anywhere?
Yeah. I'll second.
Okay. All right. We've got a motion, Mr. Cox. Second. Mr. Sanford. All in favor?
Aye.
Excellent. Unanimous approval. All right. Thank you, gentlemen. So now on to winter crab dredge survey. I
Well, thank you very much for having me tonight, gentlemen. It's great to be back in the Commonwealth after a 16-year hiatus in southeast Georgia. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited. I want to thank the staff, especially Sarah and Alex, who basically, and a lot of staff that helped me get up to speed and get the new old guy up to speed so it can be at this meeting tonight. I'm, as Rob said, I'm no spring chicken, but it's maybe to Rob I'm not, but, you know.
He told me outside.
Yeah. But it's, you know, I'm fairly familiar with blue crabs. I worked with it quite a bit down in Georgia along with the shrimp fishery as well. So, but I'm here tonight to talk about the winter dredge fishery. It's, you know, just to give you some background about it, it started in 1989. They sampled from November through March, primarily because about that time of the year, the crabs are becoming dormant, and so they can get better estimates on abundance. The survey has been done by Virginia, you know, VIMS and Maryland DNR that whole time period. They sample about 1,500 random sites a year. If you look at it on a map, it's quite impressive how many stations they do. And it's not just in the bays and the tributaries as well, as shallow as 5 feet. And the objectives are to describe the size and sex composition of the baywide population, develop accurate estimates of blue crab abundance, and estimate exploitation and fishery mortality, and come up with a status of the stock annually. And the way that they do this is they separate the catch that they have into juveniles and adults. The juveniles are all crabs less than 2.4 inches. And those crabs are going to be, when they get them over the wintertime, they're going to be available to the fishery later in the season, in the fall, and they'll be the following year's spawning stock. And then the crabs larger than 2.4 inches, those are the adults. They'll be this year's spawning stock. And they separate it out into males and females. And as Rob mentioned, the Chesapeake Bay Stock Assessment Committee is the ones who oversee this. They do all the analysis and everything, and we had a conference call on the 25th and discussed the results. All the states released the press release on the same day, so nobody was beating anybody to the punch. And we just had a meeting this week up in Colonial Beach at Potomac River Fisheries Commission where we started working on the final report for this year. And so just going to go over some of the results at this time. Okay, basically they create estimates basically by life stage. They do all crabs, the juveniles and the adults combined. Most of these graphs I'm going to show, the red line on there is just the long-term average. And you can see in 2008, the estimate was about 371 million crabs, and that was about 18% below average overall. The juvenile crabs, as I said, are the crabs that are less than 2.4 inches. 2017 was one of the worst years ever from the survey. It was the fourth worst in history. This year in 2008, it was much higher. It was 34% higher, but still well below the long-term average. The adult males were about 23% below 2017 at about 58.6 million pounds. And if you look at this graph, if you exclude the earlier years, it seems like the average is running at about 55 million, and that's about where we were. I mean, we had some very successful years early on, but we haven't been at that since. So if you take the 20-year average, which would be 1999 to the present, we're looking at about 55 million crabs, so that's about average for the last 20 years. The adult females, as Rob said, this is what we're managing the stock on. All that other information they're collecting, but the stock assessment that CBSAC did in 2011 is geared only towards females, and that's what they're targeting. That's what they're doing most of their management on. And in 2017, it was the highest level ever. It was 254 million crabs. It was the highest that they've ever had. So we had a 42% decline in 2018, but it was still 19% above normal. So it's, you know, the spawning stock is doing fairly well. And as I said, the stock assessment has created control measures primarily just for adult females. That's how the fishery is managed right now. And the green line represents a point of 250 million crabs, and that's where a healthy, sustainable fishery is. And that's, you know, the ultimate goal is to be up and around that. And the red line is the threshold, which is 70 million. That's when things started getting bad. You don't want to be below 70 million. That's why we do the lines in red and green. Red is bad, green is good. Green is very good. And again, the black line on there is just the long-term average. And you kind of see we're still above average. We haven't been below that threshold since 2014. And as I said, if you go below that value, you're overfishing the spawning stock. So right now, we're doing okay.
Excuse me.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, you say the phrase you used in 2014 is that we're overfishing. How do you come up with the overfishing? That can be weather related, a lot of different things from over. So why do you classify it as overfishing?
It's the abundance. It's a definition. It's you're below a threshold that was defined in the stock assessment.
Right. You see my point. When people don't know any different, the first thing they say is overfished. It's being overfished, but that's not always the case.
It could
be environmental impacts too.
It's a definition, and it's like, and I agree. It just means the population is below a certain level where overfishing can occur.
Yeah, well, I would recommend that be changed.
Do that?
Because that looks bad for the general public. As soon as they say overfishing, naturally comes right back to the waterman that we're catching too much of the resource.
It's
and the politicians too.
It's a point. You, like I said, the red line. You really don't want to go below that red line.
I understand that. I understand that.
And the phrase
overfishing kind of irritates me a tad bit.
Because of environmental, you know, you could be that low because of environmental factors.
Sure.
Or a lot of other reasons that have nothing to do with fishing. But the population is too low, and the chance of having overfishing is more likely at that level.
Thank you, Mitchell.
You're welcome.
All right, I don't know if you can see this from the whole room, but this is just the commercial landings by jurisdiction, Maryland. And, you know, overall, in 2017, there were 54 million pounds of crabs caught. I'm going to have a graphic of this in a second. 22 million pounds in Virginia. The long-term average back to 1990 for Virginia was 28 million pounds. The last 10 years has been about 22 million pounds of crabs in Virginia. The exploitation rates for males and females are shown off on the right. And the exploitation rate is the percent of the population based on the survey that's being taken out by fishing. And the red numbers are meant that we exceeded those thresholds that I talked about. So we haven't really done it very often. You can see for the females, we haven't done it in the last 10 years. For the males, we slightly went above it this year, and I'm going to discuss that in a second. And this is just showing that same data graphically. You know, overall, the bars, it's the overall harvest and then broken down with red being Maryland, yellow being Potomac, and blue being Virginia, with the long-term average. And then I also did the 10-year average as a dotted line. And we're right around the 10-year average. You know, we're below that long-term average back to 1990, but right around average. We've recovered pretty nicely from those really bad years we had in 2013 and 14. This is the exploitation rate for females and how it is calculated. It's the percent harvest divided by the total number of the total abundance of females, juveniles, and adults from this survey. And the green line is a target that we try to stay at or around but below it. That value is 25.5. This year was 21%. Some people will say that, hey, we want to try to get as close to that line as possible, because we're leaving some crabs on the table. But you got to realize these are calculations, and there could be some variances in these calculations. For instance, we don't know with the discard.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what the recreational fishery is. There's some concerns about how the juveniles are estimated. Yes.
Yeah, you say it was 16% in 2016, and it went to 21% last year, 2017, for females?
Yes.
We had a 9% reduction in overall catch. How did you come up with that number?
It's the abundance, the estimate of the abundance versus the landings for the year. That's how it's calculated. So it's the abundance from the survey, this dredge survey.
Mm-hmm.
It goes out and measures abundance, and it comes up with a number of crabs.
Mm-hmm.
So this is it's the female crabs, the juvenile and the juveniles and the adult crabs, females combined. and that's divided by hearts.
It's the juveniles and the females.
Yeah, it's both.
Why does it say adult female and exploitation rate then?
Good point. Mm-hmm. Thank you. It should say female.
Yeah, it's all female.
It's all female.
All female, yeah.
All sizes. And this whole thing, which you may remember from the past, is not that complicated.
Mm-hmm.
It's the catch equals the exploitation rate times the abundance. Mm-hmm. If you think of those three components, mm-hmm. if one of them changes, mm-hmm. the abundance changes, mm-hmm. the exploitation rate is going to change.
Yeah.
The catch changes.
Mm-hmm.
The main problem the past was telling you
mm-hmm.
is the catch.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the catch.
Right.
It's harvest.
Harvest, yeah.
The catch includes any of the dead discards,
mm-hmm.
any pot death that happens in the hottest part of summer,
mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
you name it. So,
yeah, just.
Traditional fisheries are a real problem
yeah.
because 2001
mm-hmm.
is the last time we had even a ballpark.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And that was ballpark.
Yeah.
And that was Dr. Jones going south.
Maybe that's something we need to be more accurate on.
What I like about this, the value of this is the trend is what I like.
Mm-hmm.
The absolute part of this,
but it's low.
Like. But the trend yeah. is good because
mm-hmm.
if you look at other things that Pat already showed you and will show you, from
mm-hmm.
1999 to about 2006,
mm-hmm.
things were pretty rugged
yeah.
with the harvest as well. I mean, that was a real low period and a lot of times where the overfishing did occur.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's the merit
is
a
trend.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been below that target for 11 years now.
Yeah.
Thank you for pointing that out.
Right.
That's a mistake on my
yeah.
part. It's just
okay.
making these graphs. And
yeah, I just, and I've been a big proponent of this. You know, I think the watermen need a fair share of the female catch. You know, and I don't think we're getting it, you know, at 16% to 20% exploitation rate. And I've been vocal about that in the past. So. I think it, you know, I think it's a good stand to be higher. And, I mean, we're leaving 75% of the population out there. If we take 25, we're leaving 75. So, I mean, that's a huge number. You know, I just.
I'll just point out that's only crabbing.
Mm-hmm.
So that exploitation rate is just about fishing, really crabbing activities.
It is, right.
It has nothing to do with irrigation,
mm-hmm.
other natural mortality.
Mm-hmm.
Crabbing.
That's based on mandatory reporting, correct?
That is based on the abundance and the harvest, right?
Which is mandatory reporting.
Yeah.
Yes.
The numbers on that.
The abundance.
Okay.
If the abundance were a lot higher,
mm-hmm.
then you would see a lower
mm-hmm.
exploitation rate.
Do you include recreational harvest in that?
No.
Well, they do include recreational harvest in there, but it's been static for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
It's relatively small, and what Maryland, I think what they said was 8%, but then in Maryland, they don't allow female crabs from the recreational fishery. So then that's 4% there, 8% there, but as I mentioned, back in 2001, and that was not a real tight measurement back then. It was
definitely
right. That's a real unknown.
Mr. Chairman, quick question about exploitation rate. Our target is 24.5%, right? And then 25.5. But we've already, don't we have a 10% buffer built into that, which the red line represents for the variables? So basically, do you follow where I'm coming from?
Yeah.
And so the variables are already there. You're giving us a 10% buffer. So really, if we achieve our 25.5, we're really not overfishing, I guess would
no.
be.
No.
Yeah, so, we're well below the target number in reality, but because of the variables of 10%.
I mean, there's a lot of variability in this.
Correct. I mean, you know, there's dead discards. I mean, there's all predation, et cetera, et cetera. But should we try to be achieving the 24.5% or not is, I guess, my question. Would that be better for the fishery?
I would say, you know, getting close to it is good, but not going over it because we know this. We know we have some issues with variability,
right?
And it's like you don't want to be too low, but you want to when I show you the male one, you'll see we're right at it. So
okay.
You know, and it's like know, and having it hover around that value is probably a good thing. You just don't want to have it, you know, we had a trend where a number of years was well above it, and you don't want that.
Yeah, we've been below it since 2008.
And I think we're doing well in that regard. And like Rob pointed out, the issues we have about some of the uncertainties.
Correct.
And that's just it. And it's so the fact, you know, it's not extremely low, but it's close. I mean, we're looking at 25.5 and we're at 21.
Correct.
So it's, and I agree, it's like every little bit helps the industry, mm-hmm. but, you know, I'm kind of confident, I'm kind of comfortable with that number, you know, in that ballpark. You know, you don't want to be hovering right at that line every year.
Right.
But we're close. Which brings me to the males, which aren't part of the numbers for the females. If I can go back. The numbers for the females, these are calculated from, these are reference points that came from the stock assessment. So there was a full stock assessment that came up with these values. Now, for males, the males and the juveniles were not considered in the stock assessment from 2011. So what we have for the exploitation rate for males is a conservation trigger, which is based on 33% exploitation rate, which was the second highest value that the survey had ever seen. So they used that. But is that what it should be? We don't know because we don't have a stock. We didn't, you know, the stock assessment didn't calculate these for males.
Right.
So, you know, hopefully, if we can get the funding to do a stock assessment in the future, we can have these same information for the, you know, for males as well. But it's right at, you know, it shot up right went from shot up to 34% this year. Now, when we had the committee meeting, the CBSAC committee meeting this week, there wasn't a lot of concern about this because it was just 1 year. And Ron Lipsch, she said, it's 1 year. It could have been an anomaly. We don't know what the problem was with it. You know, if it's 2 years in a row, then maybe we should have a concern. So the committee is suggesting we keep an eye on this, but we don't have to do any management actions as a result of this. It's just, you know, a line that it creeped up, and we'll see how things go next year. So their recommendation for the male, you know, with males is let's keep things status quo, is what they were saying based on this. Any questions about this one?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
What part is Virginia and what part is Maryland when it comes to the?
It's all combined. It's the whole Baywide.
Do we have numbers on the number of males caught in Maryland compared to what's caught in Virginia?
Mm-hmm. It's,
on this one, the answer is a lot more in Maryland. But last year, Wayne France and there was another, and A.J. Erskine, when he was on the commission, they were concerned that the percentage of males in our catch had been going down. And we looked at the data, brought it back the next meeting. It turns out that the higher amount of males on the catch occurred in two of the last 3 years in Virginia. But we don't get near Maryland. And I think you know that. I think they average maybe 65% males,
right.
And we average 68%, somewhere around there, females.
Right.
So, you know, that's been pretty steady over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I really like meetings when people are asking questions for the very next slide. And that's what this is.
One step ahead of you.
And it makes life a lot easier for all of us. So
right.
There's the answer. That's, you know, we've got Maryland and Virginia female harvest on the top, and, you know, Virginia is in blue, and on the bottom is the male catch. And you can kind of see, you know, where the blue, we're pretty much, you know, relatively stable for the male catch, and, you know, Virginia dominates the female catch, obviously.
Right.
So, I mean, that's exactly what you were just asking. And that's for the last 10 years. And Sarah put that together for us. Yeah. All right. In summary, I mean, basically the total abundance has decreased about 18% from 450 million crabs in 2017 to 371 million crabs in 2018. The juveniles, those age zero is less than 2.4 inches, the abundance increased 34%. In 2016, it was, you know, fourth lowest at 125 million crabs. 2017, it's 167 million crabs, but it's still 34% below the average of the survey back to 1990. The spawning females, which are, you know, the larger ones that will be part of the reproducing this year, decreased 23%. In 2016, it was 76 million crabs, and in 17, it was 59 million. And I kind of showed that in the graph, and you know they're watching that with the exploitation rate. We're guarded. That's the best term I could probably use. We're not overly concerned, but we're guarded.
Right.
And along with the juveniles as well, we're happy it increased, but we'd like to see it go a lot higher. The spawning stock, the females, the age ones, it decreased 42%, but when you go from your record high, there's really not much more room you can go. It's going to go down so much. So it went down 42%, but it's still well above our threshold and slightly below the target. We're about 110% above our threshold. So you know we're doing very well with that. It's 19% above the long-term average, and it's in the top 10 in the values back to in the 29 years of the survey. We know that cold water temperatures had an extensive ice cover this past winter, had some results, had some problems with mortality, worse in Maryland than here. These are mortality estimates we had. Ours were quite a bit lower than theirs. Their female mortality was a lot higher, but they probably don't have as many adult females as we have here. The adult abundance is higher than expected given the poor influx of juveniles that we had last year and the higher mortality we just saw. And, we're contributing that to the measures we put in place last year, contributing to this result. We put some measures in, and we're starting to see the results of those. And based on these results, the CBSAC work group is recommending no additional management measures at this time. And that's the staff's recommendation as well.
Okay.
So, any other questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Cox.
You're soon realize I've got a lot of questions.
That's all right.
The survey is done in the wintertime. So are you telling me that when they made their survey that the crabs that they caught up, some of them were dead at the time? How did they come up with the winter mortality?
I believe so.
How was that determined?
I believe so. I think the mortality rate is basically dead crabs they were bringing up. Isn't that the case?
They go back out and do the survey. Do the overwinter survey after they finish the survey. So that's how they do that. They go back to the certain sites and then they
make another survey. Two surveys then.
They do a follow-up on what they do for the overwinter and mortality.
Okay. They're also reporting dead crabs.
They did it in March, probably towards the third week of March, I think.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. Other questions? Yes, sir.
Yeah, what I don't understand is, I mean, of course, I know Maryland doesn't have, a lot of females, but they lost 35%. Due to the dead kill. Well, the crab buries in the wintertime. That's why he buries in the mud, is to get away from the cold weather, and it goes in hibernation. So why, I don't see how we get these high numbers for mortality, when the crab is designed to do that,
But with any animal, there's a critical temperature where you're going to have mortality, and it's, the temperatures on the whole East Coast were very, very low in January. The ice pack that was being seen was, and people were saying they hadn't seen that in a long time. So those water temperatures were down around, 33, 34 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, I'd say that was probably in shallow water. Where our females in deeper water, where they bury in deeper water, that's why ours was 10%, theirs was 35%. But that skews our numbers. When you put that into our numbers.
No, it doesn't, because most of the females are being caught in Virginia.
Yeah.
It's going to be okay.
Okay.
Other questions?
It happened in the Pocono, too, on the Virginia side. In some places, in the kind of year signs, when we're oystering, after that freeze up, it was a lot of dead ones around.
January.
Okay. January freeze up, yeah. Okay.
Any other questions? I want to ask just one quick question. What makes it so that you think there are more females that die in Maryland than males? I mean, what's going on there?
I think you hit the nail on the head with the females in Maryland. I think it's probably shallow water.
Farther north you go, the colder water is.
And it's colder water. Yeah. They don't have the abundance that we have down in this area. So, if it's a smaller population, then you might see a higher rate. But the further up you go, the colder the bay is going to be. So that's probably a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Because down in Virginia, they'll stack on top of each other. They'll go in the bottom, and they'll be 2-3 deep. So that helps. That helps to keep them warm too.
All right.
No other questions? All right, thank you.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
One other question. This stock assessment committee, can you go back to that for a second? I got a couple questions on that.
On the committee itself?
The first page, yeah. I'm not familiar with this Chesapeake Bay Stock Assessment Committee. Who is that, and who's on it, and can you give me a little info on that?
Yeah, well, it's part of NOAA, as I recall, and it's a conglomerate of, you know, a lot of different agencies. It's BIMS, Maryland DNR, Marine Resources Commission, the Potomac River Fisheries Commission, Chesapeake Bay Biological Lab. The researchers, you know, we have the researchers at BIMS, like, as Rob said, you know, Ron Lipschitz and Tom Miller's at CBL. And Beaufort Lab as well. Mm-hmm. And what they're doing is, you know, they're taking this information, and, you know, Maryland has their crab biologists. We have our staff that we use, and, you know, they're developing the, you know, the stock assessment was done, and it was a pretty extensive task to do. I think Tom Miller was the lead on it. I believe Tom Miller from Chesapeake Bay Labs. And they take a lot, they're pretty extensive. If you know much about stock assessments, they're not an easy thing to do. They're pretty involved. And that, you know, right now we don't have the money. We'd like to do another one, but there's no funding for it. So that's why the last one was 2011. And the idea behind a stock assessment is to come up with reference points for that species. And that's why, like, the females, I said, the values we had, those thresholds and those triggers of, you know, 70 and 215 million crabs, those are based on that stock assessment. They've run through and they've been approved and peer-reviewed. So those are numbers that they can use for management purposes. The committee itself is just, it's biologists and the managers in the states and the researchers at BIMS and at CBL.
Mm-hmm.
So
they advise y'all just like we do.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'll add to that, which is CBSAC started about 1989.
Oh, it did? Okay.
And I've been a member since 1993. I haven't been a very good member the last 6 years because other things get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
But PAC will be a member to take my place. But,
okay.
It was under NOAA, always NOAA Chesapeake Bay office. And NOAA Chesapeake Bay office for years responsible for having research projects, and the winter dredge, baywide winter dredge survey was their biggest project, and they kept saying each year, we've got to cut you loose because, you know, the research is done, and the states would always say, well, we don't have the funding. So I think NOAA ended up funding that survey, this same survey, for probably more than 10 years. And now what's happened about 7 years ago, Congress was formed under the Chesapeake Bay program, what's called the Sustainable Fisheries Goal Implementation Team, GIT. Some of you may have heard of that.
CBC.
There are like five GITs, just habitat, water quality, fisheries. I'm on the fisheries one.
Mm-hmm.
Under the GIT is actually CBSAC now. It's a program under the GIT.
Mm-hmm.
But NOAA Chesapeake Bay office still is sort of the leading entity
mm-hmm.
for the whole part of that.
Okay.
So there have been some changes, but mm-hmm. essentially, you know, NOAA Chesapeake Bay office still plays
mm-hmm.
a big role.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I wanted to mention, Pat is talking about the stock assessment. That has happened in 1997, 2005, and 2011, stock assessment. There hasn't been one since 2011, but every year there is a Chesapeake Bay advisory report on the crabs that's put out by Chesapeake Bay Stock Assessment Committee. And so it at least keeps everything going for the public and for everyone else on what the latest information is, what the management needs are, what the research needs are.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that continues to be produced even though the stock assessment hasn't been done since 2011.
Okay.
And the problem is stock assessments are expensive.
Mm-hmm.
The jurisdictions can't afford
right.
stock assessment.
Mm-hmm. That was my next question.
Yes, sir.
But can you give it any budget numbers for this winter crab dredge survey? Or does it stay consistent each year?
How much it costs
yeah.
the survey?
Budget-wise?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, it's been a while since I knew it when I was here last, when I used to
mm-hmm.
be here. I couldn't begin to guess.
I'm just wondering what we were spending on this, you know. Yeah.
I have a guess, but I don't want to say it. Fear of being too low.
I knew what it was 16 years ago.
Oh, gosh.
That way. It's like, and ironically, the same gentleman's running that for Virginia, the same gentleman who's been running that survey the entire time.
But Maryland puts in some money and Potomac River, too.
Yes.
Well, Maryland and Virginia put the money in.
Okay.
Because Potomac is owned by Maryland, so Maryland
okay. does. Is it 50-50?
Don't know. Oh. I hate to say without knowing.
No, I don't know. Maryland's pretty slick.
It's pretty. I mean, you think about 1,500 stations across the way. There's a lot of dots on those maps.
Right, it is.
It's all the way up in the tributaries as well. So, I mean, this year they had a hard time. Just with if there wasn't ice out in the bay, there was wind. Mm-hmm. They had a hard time, and they got it all done. But
done anything in January.
Yeah. And there's a video on Facebook at Vims's website of them going through, and it's just nothing but ice all around them.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay, thanks.
Yes, sir.
Doug Jenkins, I see you went on a survey going back in 1999. Do you all have anything here going on back to 1950?
There's the Vims Trawl survey that I used to run goes back to 1955. That survey is, there are some problems with that survey. The fact that it's a good survey, but they've had a lot of changes to the gear and things like that, and it's having the stretch survey, having Maryland and Virginia doing an identical manner is what makes this survey, the value of this makes it a lot higher. Now, the Vims Trawl survey has been considered in the stock assessment, so has the Maryland Trawl survey, as well as Chestnut, which is another trawl survey they do. They have been considered. Chestnut was a shorter time series, but the Vims Trawl survey has been going on since 1955. There are some problems, though, because of gear changes and that. And I think that's probably why it was not, included in the final part of the stock.
But I have a copy of that going back to 1955 with the results of
We can get you a hold of Mary Fabrizio and she can get you a copy. Okay. I can give you an old copy, but it's probably 16 years old. But
doesn't matter to me.
Mary and Dennis could probably get you a copy of their survey.
Thanks. All right, Mr. Jenkins.
Anything else?
Any other questions, any other thoughts on the potential recommendation to the commission for the harvest of what we're going to do for the coming year. You've heard that we're going to maintain the status quo. Is there any conversation on that, comments on that?
I've got a couple comments, but I don't know if it's the right time.
Sure,
to
I think.
We're talking about discards and stuff like that. And in the lower bay, the discards of black sponge crabs is a problem. I think there's a higher mortality rate, basically, is what it comes down to. And so I think we're losing a lot of crabs there. And now that we're on bushel limits, I think we either a study needs to be done on that, on the mortality rate again, to actually see what the mortality rate is. Because from my understanding is when they did the study, it was in tanks. They didn't include tide, wave action, or anything. And right now, I'm going to recall this by memory, but Mr. Lipska said right around 70 degrees, mortality rate increased. The water temperature at Kipta Peak State Park right now is about 69 degrees. Mm-hmm. So as black sponge crabs come off, mm-hmm. you're going to see a higher and higher mortality rate. And I'd like to see something done about that. We're on bushel limits. I mean,
you got to pick a house so they can pick them.
Mm-hmm. You're right. But why take a crab, throw it back when you know it's going to die?
My picker won't pick them.
You gotta wait.
Not to interrupt you, but it's the iodine in them.
Right, I understand.
When you dump them on the table, it mixes with the other crabs.
Absolutely, but then again, we're still throwing back crabs at the
Yeah.
People will pick those crabs.
Oh, yeah, they will,
Maybe your picker
won't. They're fat, yeah.
But I feel like a lot of crabs are not being counted. Mm-hmm. Something needs to be done about that. Mm-hmm. Period.
And then you don't help the crab houses keep a consistency of supply. They got these workers and everything in there. It looks like to me they're running on strings now. They need anything they can to keep everything going. I mean, it's kind of the backbone of the industry.
Well, I know there are people here who have told me the amount of sponge crabs that they have to sell.
Mm, right.
Okay. And but I also know that DMRC often keeps regulations forever. Is what I hear too.
Mm-hmm.
This particular regulation is 23 years old.
Correct.
And it was passed as sort of a, I'll call it a patchwork approach to helping the industry out. Because back in the 90s, 94 and 96, the industry actually came to the commission and said, you got to do something. And we did. And in 96, we had this big meeting over at Warwick High School. And then the commission came back, and that was part of the package that was put through, which is sponsored. So originally it was July 15th. And then it was pushed back to June 30th, and then it was pushed back to June 15th, where it stands now. So I agree that it needs to be looked at. And it's just a matter of how we can get that done. The BIMS information really was done in warm water. And in 2007, Dr. McConaughey and Dr. Lipschitz both told the commission that June is still a time when you don't have as much mortality of the female crabs that you would have in July and August.
Yes.
The sponge is a different situation. If you're going to lose the sponge even in June, then that's something we need to find out. In other words, if there's mortality of the sponge, we need to know that. So I'm with you all the way on that and have been. Just how do we find a way to, you know, get the commission to say, okay, this study has been done, and this really is something that is not benefiting us, because if you're dumping crabs to get other crabs, you know, you're losing the stock there.
Right.
And that's the problem.
And that is happening.
Egg on inside.
The good thing is that at least it's still not where it was. I mean, can you imagine if we're still at July 15th? Even a worse problem,
yeah.
Bigger problem. So, you know, I'll talk to Dr. Lipschitz. I'll see who else might have an interest in getting a study. There's something called the Fishery Resource Grant out of BIMS, and they do certain studies. And you know, this should probably be one of them.
Mm-hmm. It should be. Yeah. It needs to be. So, I mean, we're on 300 pound license of 255 is 29 bushels. Back in 2006 or whenever that was, we were 51 bushels up until June 1st.
Right.
And then after that, it was unlimited.
Yep.
You know, I mean, this is a total waste of a good product.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, a very large number that we're throwing back that are not surviving.
Okay. I think that's a comment I can relate to the commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
I'm sure Mr. Jenkins remembered this, but I was talking about 94, that was when we came up with the TriPoint Management Plan. But many years ago, in July, we fish on Saturday. We baited our pots up on Sunday. You baited them up on Saturday. Monday morning, 75% of them were dead and gone. You just shook them overboard.
Right.
And anybody that was crabbing back in the 90s and up to 2010 can remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bad situation. 75% of everything we caught, we dumped back overboard. We went out on Sunday and baited on Sunday. So if we baited on Saturday, Monday morning, 75% of them were dead. Claws, eat right off of them. Nothing but the shell itself. You can remember that, can't you?
Remember the Wednesday closure.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep. Any other comments or questions? Yes, sir, Mr. Miller.
Rob, I know the sponge crab rule is 23 years old, but we've, like you said, we've updated it three times during that. Did we do one study and do it? We did two.
Twice. No, not study. It was updated twice, so we kept on bringing it back.
Right, because we started, right. And the last one was only about 3 years ago, right?
Last year, the year before is when they bumped it back.
2010, I thought, but I could look.
I think
it's
just bumped it. They just bumped it back.
I think it was 2012 or 2014. Yeah. One of the two.
Okay.
Yeah, right here. That was probably on.
But I mean, it hasn't hurt anything. Every time they done it, it hasn't seemed to hurt anything or made a difference. So.
Because we're still throwing. Well, are we still talking about what we want to do? Or possible?
Yes. You've got something else?
Well, another thing, too. I mean, we've got these dates on the sanctuary and stuff like that. I mean, has there ever been a real evaluation of the sanctuary, whether or not it's actually working 100% the way you want it to? Or, well, I guess what I'm getting at, the dates, per se, are they really effective?
15. Since you had the question. Yeah, you're Thank right. You. You're right. I'm sorry, Mark. Go ahead.
The sanctuary dates.
Yeah.
How effective, or first off, the... I guess what you say, the sanctuary itself, has that ever been looked at to see if it's actually achieving what we want it to do 100%? And what I'm asking about is the dates and stuff like that. You know, we're at June 1st for a long time, and then we switched the dates up to the 15th and then the 9th of May. It seems to me the way the dates are, they're not right. But that's my opinion. And the reason I say that is if the way that the crab stages when it molts, it slowly moves down the river, say an adult female moves down the river to a higher salinity area. But when the sanctuary closes, we actually come out of that sanctuary, go to the tributaries where that crab is moving down. And so we're more or less targeting a very, very, I guess, a crab that has the greatest ability to spawn because it's the first spawn, and we're actually harvesting that crab. I mean, how do we know that we're not doing more damage by having the dates shoved back to the 15th of May? Maybe it should be June 1st, and you follow it? Because then what you're doing is you're actually letting that crab move down the tributaries mm-hmm. and out into the sanctuary as we're actually moving in. Right.
That's how that was set.
I'm talking more for the springtime, not so much though.
The May time was set originally at June 1 and then pushed into May, and that goes back to when both Dr. McConaughey and Dr. Riches told the commission that getting towards the last week in May is that first spawn.
Right.
The smaller spawn, the larger spawn is in July, August. Period, you know, in that time period. So, I think as long as the crabs are where they are designed to be by the sanctuary, then it would be effective the way it is. But I don't think I have the answer for you. I think that's something that Dr. Lipschitz should have the ability to let us know.
Right.
If you remember, about 3 years ago, we all were looking at ways of narrowing the sanctuary and having trade-offs and doing all that. And we never quite finished that. You know, after that, it became tough to have a quorum at the meetings and things and everything else. And, you know, I think Mr. Cox will remember that we were going through that
yes.
Process, a couple of meetings, and then we never followed up with it. We mean everyone. You know,
right.
The whole group.
Yeah, staff. I think there was quite a few things that we didn't follow up on.
And so there's a lot that needs to be found out.
Right.
You know, that sanctuary was mainly 2000, the extensions were 2000 and 2001. And the reason they were put in place back at that time, it was a bi-state blue crab advisory committee.
Yep.
And they wanted a reduction in exploitation rate, which Pat explained to you, and of 15%. And everyone got all mixed up as to what 15% meant. But all the jurisdictions had to come up with 15% reduction. That's where that Wednesday closure came as part of it. The industry knew it was not too swift to have a Wednesday closure, and that's where the sanctuaries were extended. So, yes, I agree that there should be some assessment now, because everything is based on the distribution of female crabs all the way from winter time down to spawning time.
Right. I mean, if these sanctuaries were working.
The idea of the cars.
Yeah. I mean, my opinion, it could be totally off. I mean, if these sanctuaries were actually working, we'd have crabs everywhere. But we're not seeing that.
Yeah.
You know, period. I mean, we're just not seeing it. We're seeing better numbers, but we're not seeing a great increase.
Yeah, people cat this.
Well, if you can promise to have a quorum next time.
I've been here every time.
I'm not being facetious at all, but you know, if you can stick with it, because it's hard now because you're working around the clock, some of you, I mean, especially with the field issues. But if you can do that, we can have a work session with Ron and kind of get these things looked at by someone who is involved, you know, completely with it.
Right.
This was really something Ron brought forward. If you remember, there was a time where the commission even looked at going from shore out to extending the sanctuaries from shore out. Just that Ron wanted it in that area.
Corridors.
Yeah.
Is what they wanted.
Yep.
Okay.
Right.
So I think you have good questions. I don't think anyone here can answer them sufficiently. We need some science. We need some science.
Yeah.
I agree with you there. So I'll be happy to talk to Ron about this as well.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Ron did a presentation, or I've seen him do a presentation that has some of the data. It's been long enough ago that it's probably worthwhile, even if there's not a whole lot of new data, that we see it again. Because I think it'll at least start the discussion.
I mean, if we had any, can we attribute any negative results to every time we bumped it back? I mean, we've seen an increase, it bumped it back and still seen increases, so I don't see where we can see where it's hurt. We've just done it incrementally. If you just knock it down another 2 weeks and nothing happens, I don't see where. Chew it back a little bit, and eventually you run your hand in the cookie jar, nothing won't be nothing in there. You'll chew it up. I mean.
Yeah, incremental management is a positive, generally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And we did some of that this year.
Yeah.
It was only a week. But
right. Mm-hmm. It was 5 days.
5 days
that helped.
But that was only the lower bank.
Right, correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2, 3, 4.
I've got another question.
One more? Oh, sure.
Yeah, why not? I'm full of them.
The May 9th closure, is that going to be your recommendation for the lower bay sanctuary?
No.
Or is it going to be the 15th of May to the commission as far as?
16th?
I'm sorry, the 16th, yes.
So that's already gone through.
Right. But I'm talking for the upcoming crabbing season, the 2019, because you go through July.
Let me follow you a little more closely.
Okay.
So last
your
month,
recommendations for this upcoming
right.
closure, okay, you allowed us to extend it this year, late. In other words, right before it was supposed to close, we had a meeting, commission meeting.
Right.
Okay. Are you going to... Is it still going to be the May 16th on the 2019 season?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Just want to make sure I was right.
All right.
I mean, we worked hard. How many years did that take?
A lot. I'd like to see June 1st.
I
mean, I'm going to be greedy. But people don't understand that our sanctuary in the lower bay is the only sanctuary that goes right to the shoreline, and we have no place to go. And
that's 4 years. So come on.
I know. I've got 20 years.
You
got 20 more years. I'll be here 20 more years.
Another question.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Rob.
Yes, sir.
You're basically saying that you're not going to recommend any changes to the commission for any changes in crab potting this year. Is that correct? That's it. You're going to leave everything just like it is. No recommendations, no changes as of this point.
Right.
Is that correct? Okay.
Which is a possible another long 4 or 5 years
right.
from Mark talking about Area 4
sanctuary.
And the coast. The idea that we will talk about fish pots in a few minutes, but first I think we're going to have to talk about this great legislation that came out
okay.
to allow hard crab. That's the next one.
Okay.
Thank you.
Everybody ready for the next item on the agenda then? Okay.
So what I'd like to do, Dan, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Reluctantly?
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, Alex has a few slides to show on licensing, but then if you wouldn't mind after that to give, you know, your thoughts, because I know you checked with a number of folks over in your area after Alex goes through his slides, okay? All right, good.
So go ahead and show the slides.
Sure. So what you're looking at here in this table is we're looking at the number of harvesters with peeler crab harvest using scrape gear by water body. And what you can see in this table is that the majority of scrape harvest occurs in the Tangier Sound. And it's somewhat decreased over the last 3 years. This is peeler crab harvest by scrape gear from 2008 forward. You can see that peeler crab harvest has steadily declined from 2008 to 2017. So that's why we have a 2 5-year average. We have 2013 to 2017 is roughly about 50,000 pounds, and the 10-year average is about 67,000 pounds. And this is the number of active and eligible crab scrape licensees. So you can see that in 2017 we had about 264 people were eligible for the license, 114 people actually purchased the license, and of the 114 people that purchased it, only 21 actually had peeler crab harvest. So that's roughly 8% of the total people that were eligible to actually purchase this license. And so this is an idea if we wanted to look at allowing people using scrape gear to harvest hard crabs, specifically female hard crabs, if they were allowed 3 bushels a trip, what we would do is we took the number of total trips, our total number of scrape gear trips, you multiply that by 3 to get an idea of how many bushels of female crabs they could harvest. So what that would end up being at 3 bushels a trip would be about 88 bushels a harvester, which is only about 0.5% of the total amount of female bushels in 2017. If they were allowed 2 bushels a trip, that would be roughly about 59 bushels a harvester. And when you compare that to all the bushels of female crabs, it's only about 0.3%. So it's not a lot. And, you know, at this point, we're considering different bycatch allowances, and we kind of wanted to get your opinion on what you think could be harvested or what you'd like to see harvested for female crabs using scrape gear. And that's what I have for you now. So I'll be happy to take any questions.
Is that with the 8% doing it?
What's that?
I say, is that just with the 8% doing it that you totaled up there?
I think it's correct.
Oh, yeah.
I was just going by if everybody did it that had a license.
What's the 10-year average?
Originally just had 3 years there, and then Alex went back a little longer. Of all the licenses, it's sort of unusual that so few are used, but they're buying them.
I see, but would they use them if you...
Well, we don't know that.
I was getting at.
I think what you have to say is the trend is that somewhere around 12% over time.
Is it?
The last 8 years, that's all it's using. Mm-hmm. And would this be an enticement? I think the idea of the hard crab allowance, which what I figured out the best I can is that this started in 1989. 1988 prohibition for hard crabs, and so it's been on the books for quite a while. But now it should be looked at as a bycatch, and I hope we'll hear from Dan next.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. Hang on, Dan. One second.
The second day, this was only females. They aren't allowed to keep any males
they
even.
They can, but now you're going to hear from Dan.
Okay.
We're riding off what Dan relayed to me a while back on why it's just female hard crabs. So I think Dan will help us out.
Okay. And that he's the area they're harvesting it from, right? And what the slide showed.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Mr. Dice.
Okay, Dan.
All right. As Rob said, this was many years ago. We had a big fleet of scrapers back in the 80s. Now, even when I started, I graduated when I was 1996. And we had like 70-some people. That's great. And this was started back in the 80s because the crab otters were going way in on the bowers for the people scrape. And they come together and they made this, I guess, alliance or this pact that they drew a sanctuary line that the pods could go inside and the scrapers couldn't save our crabs. Well, the scrapers have diminished, astronomically. I guess we're life eaters. I guess there might be 10 full talent right now. There's 3 doing it. And, you know, once this hard crab can run, looks like this is about over. You might get a few more into it. And the idea is most of them are you know, older men. And you know, they don't. At one time, it was the easier thing to do. It was like a bycatch. And I understand that. I mean, I used to do it. I actually sold my scraping boat. I sold her this winter. And there's not really that much potential for doing it. I think Rob or Alex once said that the license not being used, but they keep being bought, and I guess it's just because we don't want to lose it. But in all honesty, I don't care if I do it again. But you know, for the ones that do it, it was like a polycatch. And most of the times, I think me and Rob had talked about this. I don't know if this was said. Most of the times, with the females, as most of you will probably know, the shoulder of water until later on. You really don't have that much of a market for them. You're picking eyes that don't really want them. They're just shedded. They're not really that great. I know, like, I hear the ones up in Maryland, they're able to save all the hard crabs. They have to float them until they get hard enough, this, that, and the other. So when Rob asked me about a season, was about, you know, trying to do it as a bycatch, I went around and I asked them all, and they were all okay with from August on, you know, 3 baskets, 2 baskets, whatever. The Jimmy thing, if you've never scraped, if you're in a little area where you're catching doublers, that it's a good catch of doublers, you get the Jimmy doubled up. If you save the Jimmies, eventually you won't catch anymore. You know, if the Jimmies are going, you won't get the doublers. The idea is to throw them back so that they keep rolling the doublers, they keep hooking up, and you getting them back with the doubler underneath, the female underneath. Some, there are one or two that would like to save them, but there are more that wouldn't. So I told Rob, I think it'd be easier on enforcement, on tension, on stress, just the animosity of let the he-crabs go back and just save the subs. It would just make life a lot simpler. And most of the talents, the bower sooks that we get here, in all reality, once in a while, you'll see some gimmies that are huge, that are really big, that will be considered ones, but most of them will be considered number twos. And some of them are just like, you know, your 4.5, 4.75 he crab. So it's just easier. It would be less stressful on everybody if they would just go back and it'd just be, you know, the 3 baskets of soot from like all of us.
All right. Any comments?
Maybe a question for Dan.
Dan, have to speak up. For some reason, I'm not hearing everybody tonight.
Hit that microphone.
further away, or everybody's whispering.
Okay.
Dad, a question for you is, why the August through the rest of the season? I think when I talked with some folks about it, they felt like all season this would be okay, but is it a pretty strong sentiment for the August start date for this?
We actually don't care that it's August.
Okay.
Rob asked me, and Rob, you can correct me if I'm wrong. Rob asked me if, about a bycatch and what would be the best time to do it, like almost like a season on it. We actually don't care if it would be all year. It would be it wouldn't be a bad one way or the other, but when Rob asked me that, that was the conclusion that we all come up with. If it's got to be a set time, at least give it to us at the end of the year, because that's when you start, you'll see more sooks on devour. You really don't see a whole lot of sooks in this area, what I'm speaking of. You don't really see a whole lot of sooks on devour until around August, until the doubler starts showing up, the second doubler show up, and starts yet. But we wouldn't have a problem if it was all year, but that was the impression that I got from Rob.
All right, Rob.
So, Dan, first of all, I really appreciate the information that you have provided. Very valuable, and talking to other people is extremely valuable. Do you think it might be an okay idea to start off this first time with an August 1 through end of October season for the bycatch, and then see how things look after this first time around?
I think that's what the impression was on, on giving on this. I also want to bring this up, Rob. I think this was part of Delegate Blockson's deal. Wasn't there something in there about the hydraulics Greg could do?
Yeah. Yeah, go to hydraulic. Stop pulling behind and use hydraulics.
But it didn't end up that way. And there was also something we found out where at one point the bill had a 5 feet, I guess, which was great.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And
mm-hmm.
But that dropped out in the final bill that we saw. So, and there were also, you remember, maybe two bills. So Doug Blockson had two bills. One got killed, and then the same thing came back in a different bill. That's what I saw. But I just
I was just wondering. I weren't sure.
Yeah, I just think since this hasn't been, it's not going to be a lot of crabs, but it might be good to try August 1 and then see what the feedback is, what we get on that, and then, look at it again after the first year. I'm asking the committee the same kind of question. Does that sound reasonable?
Mr. Chair,
sir.
I'm prepared to make a motion on this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making a motion from August 1st to the end of October that crab scraping be allowed a 3-bushel bycatch limit each day. That's my motion.
And females only.
Females only, yep.
And I say we bring it back into the year and see what it did.
Well, my motion was to the end of October. I made my motion.
Yes, sir. You've heard a motion? Any discussion on
August 1st to end of October, females only, 3-bushel bycatch per day.
And we get to look at it next year?
Yeah.
I think he seconded it.
Did he second?
Did you second it?
Yeah.
All right.
Discussion?
All right. Any discussion on the motion and second? All right. I call the question. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Say no. All right, ayes have it. Unanimous. Thank you, Mr. Dyes.
You're welcome.
Appreciate your input and effort.
Mr. Chairman, can I?
Yes, sir.
Rob, when we were discussing this legislation during the session, there was some discussion about a control date for this. Is that something that we need to consider, or do you think the number is so small that we could always go back and put a control date later if we needed it? Okay.
I mean, from what Alex showed us, we're looking at current times at 0.5% perhaps. So I think it would be important to get a look at this.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that obviously no one's seen for quite a while.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So we'll move on to item number 3, discussion of predator prey interactions between striped bass and blue crabs?
Mr. Jenkins is here.
Mr. Jenkins is here, yeah.
All right.
I know it's something that's been on his mind for some time.
Many,
Mr.
Many
Jenkins,
years.
You...
Many, many years.
I didn't know Ron and Jim were going to come to so soon, but anyway, I don't have any notes or anything, but you all know who I am, Doug Jenkins. I'm with Coon River Waterman Association. I've been crabbing and fishing for a few years. I had given Ron some... statements that I had kept over the years, going back to around 1960 through around 1981 on my harvest of striped bass in the area and also my harvests of crabs. Back in those days, the legal size of striped bass was 12 inches in Potomac River and 12 inches in the bay. Wasn't in the quota, wasn't in the limit, wasn't in the season. You catch all you want, both commercially and recreational. And at the same time during those years, had a lot of crabs. I mean, crabs that none of you up here realize that we had back then. But the majority of the fish that I harvest then, when taking my statements, and I showed Ron some, and I've showed Ron, Rob some here over the years, those fish, it was against the law to save anything over 15 pounds. You had to throw that back. But we kept the small fish, 12 inches up to, and most of the fish that I harvest then were at a 2-inch, I mean, 4-inch and 4.5-inch gill net. So those fish, two-thirds of them were under 16 inches. And the ones that was over 16 inches weren't over 22 or 24 inches of 4.5-inch gill net. I was just one small fisherman. I harvest on average around 23 to 25 tons striped bass a spring, and I made a few hauls in the summer where I'd catch 8,000-10,000 pounds. But I calculated and I figured that up. I averaged through those years around 175,000 fish. I was just one small fish, and my brother-in-law fished three times as much net as I did. And I can go back over the names of the ones in Colonia Beach and Walker Parkinson and Brady Wilkinson and different ones. I know them all. I can probably come up with a pretty good number on how many rockfish was taken out of that area during that time. I was just wondering if anybody down here or the ASMFC or anywhere else has got a number of how many rockfish that stays in the bay now year-round because of the size limit and because of the quotas and because of the limits that recreations have on it. I would, you know, right off the top of my head, I would say it was, I mean, it wouldn't be far stretched to say it was 100 million more. Two, three, I mean, it could be. Because we have an awful lot of small fish that stay in the bay now year-round because the northern states want us to keep them grow up when they go to coast so they can have them. And that's unfair. And the stonks of those fish, those small fish, they know when the crab sheds, the small jewel crab, when they shed. They know that from instinct. Also, they know it from the salinity in the water because Dr. Dan Van Eagle back in Vims told me back in the 60s that the rockfish, the small rockfish, and the baby crabs sort of occupied the same area, the salinity around 8 to 10 parts. And that's true. Ron confessed to that. So my question to the Crab Advisory Committee, of all the regulations that they've imposed,
stop dredging, added hundreds of square miles of sanctuary, cut the crab or brought the crabbers back, limit the number of crabbers, limit the time they can feast, limit the number of pots. It hadn't helped the crab industry. That's why I want records going back to the 1950s. But we harvested some crabs back then. I can tell you that. All over the whole bay. Not just the lower part of the bay, but I mean the bay and all the tributaries. I fished bank traps back then, and I fished crab pots. If it wasn't the amount that you could catch that bothered you so much, it was the amount that you could sell.
Yep.
Couldn't sell but 3 days a week. I had 40 pots in the creek. I'd fish them in the morning, catch 8-10 bushels. I'm not stretching anything. I'm telling you like it is. And if the washing boats came down and had one another load, go to Washington, I'd go back that avenue, catch the same darn thing. 8-10 bushels. Mm-hmm. Bank traps, they would run so full that I'm not a saint. But on Saturdays, I left the doors out of them. And on a Sunday evening, when I come back from visiting my mother-in-law in church, I put the doors back in so I'd have a good catch Monday morning. Because if I kept the doors under them, I wouldn't have no but bodies. And I was in the business of shedding them. I wasn't in the business of killing them. And somewhere along the line, some of these managers, you've got to come to face the facts. We got to do something with predation. And it's going to take an effort of all the citizens of this commonwealth. So I've been for years trying to get management to do it, and they fail. So I'm going a different route this time. We're going to let the general public decide on who's going to save rockfish, whether it's going to be Virginians or the northern states. And I've been to the printers, and we're going to print up a 8x11.5 piece of paper like this, poster with a rockfish right in the middle of it with a little bag of crabs, around 40, 50 baby crabs in it. And we're going to make thousands of those and distribute them all over the state of Virginia. And we're also, we're going to be on a computer. We're setting up a website now. And let the public decide whether they want to eat affordable crabs or let the northern states have the striped bass. And we realize blue catfish is a predator problem. I think it was about 3 or 4 years ago we got the game department together and all the state people around, a lot of them that was in position to make a decision. We met down at a park, and the game department didn't want to have anything to do with any kind of restriction on the blue catfish. They brought them in here, and it was a multi-million-dollar industry. A multi-million-dollar industry for five guys that were guides that took people to catch big catfish in James River. That would be a good thing to get into if they made that much money, but I don't think they did. But anyhow, now the latest Game and Industry Virginia Wildlife has come out and said that 30% of the blue catfish that they checked, their stomachs had crabs on. Back then, they weren't making an impact. So anyhow, that's concern that I have of predation, and this commission has sort of put that on the back shelf, and I think they ought to bring it up. If there's anything you as advisors on the crab committee can make a recommendation, I think it would be appropriate. I know the Bay Foundation probably has something about catching rockfish. Everything I ever read about them, it was how great job we did of saving them. But damn if it wasn't plenty of them from the 60s through the 80s. I can tell you that, we had plenty of crabs too. Got any questions? Haven't you, Mr. Clark? You looking at me?
Me and you've been through this many times, and we will meet with in Richmond.
Okay,
thank you. Our natural resources. But one of the things we've always been through the years, and Rob can agree, is that Atlantic States Marine Fisheries, they control rockfish. They give the state a quota, and so
we have a
we got to do something different than that.
Yeah, in that charter is under ASMFP in the charter, in the law. They've overlooked down here for some reason. Though they got emergency. If Estrepa system has a emergency in it, they can change that.
Yes, that's true.
They can bring it forward to Secretary of Commerce.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to make that change. You got to make an effort. If everything is, you know, okay, then we're not going to get a change. But anybody else got a question?
But Mr. Jenkins, you would like to see us do what with regard to the catfish? Is there something in particular you'd like to do there? You mentioned rockfish, but predation is a problem with the catfish.
We want to try to get eliminate as many of them as we can.
Right.
And it's only not
good.
It's the only non-native species in Virginia that I know of that has protections against it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah. Before when we addressed them, they didn't want it to happen. Matter of fact, our delegate was going to bring it before the legislature. Politics up there, you know, have shined the value of our crab.
When were they released?
When
were they released?
Back in the 70s. Yeah. Started to into 80s,
mm-hmm.
One grew after the other. Yawk, game, then the Rappahannock, and I believe it might have been a few later in Potomac. I know just 2 weeks ago, a boy hadn't got his rockfish quota yet. He was late. I don't know whether he had some sick illness in his family or whatever. Anyhow, he said, 6-inch net for the catch of 28 under. And he said at the place there where he usually catches fill it, and the first morning when he fished, he had 1,000 pounds of catfish, 600-foot net.
Yep, that's unreal. Yep.
I got a question, yes.
About catfish. Wasn't there a study done with the electroshock where they allowed an individual with a permit to do that?
Yep.
Still going.
So
the first time they said it in fresh water, so it wasn't going to be no crabs there. They checked the belly, you know, they said, well, they're really not doing no harm.
Okay. Were they trying to make that a commercial fishery?
It is.
It is a commercial fishery. Yeah. So how do you...
about.
How do you get a permit?
Right now with the newer...
It's an experimental thing. Mark, I serve on that grant committee that does that. It's experimental.
How far along are they?
Probably 3 years into it now.
And how long are they going to study this?
You know how that goes.
I know the boys that do it. They told me you can go right back to the same spot like the next day and catch just as much. They go right back down there, and they just got people in the boat, and they'll scoop them up. They go back the next day and catch just as many.
Yeah, they shock them.
To answer your question, I have one other thing. I understand the shocking machine they have doesn't work very good in salinity in the water.
Yep. It's like a 10-second.
You don't really get a true amount of that shocking system.
It's like a 10-second thing. You go around and shock for 10 seconds and you go around and gather up all you can.
Yeah.
Yep. It don't last no time. They come top of water.
Rob, do we have any recourse with ASMFC as far as making recommendations for, you know, predation? Is there any leeway in a room there anywhere?
No. The problem is that we have lost what authority we had when they went to this new addendum, which gave a 20.5% reduction to the bay jurisdiction, 25% to the coast. When they did that, the Chesapeake Bay quota, which we had from 1997 until 2014, is gone. We were all aligned in three jurisdictions. We had a recreational quota, which was difficult because you had to wait for February to find out how you did through the season, and we had the commercial quota in all jurisdictions.
Mm-hmm.
And what longer around. And at least then we would have had time, not so much for predation, but we would have had time to either increase the quota or decrease the quota, which we did both over time. If you remember, the last time, 2013, the harvest control model, which was used by the Bay jurisdiction, said you better take a reduction, there's less exploitable biomass out there. And we did, 14%. Came back in 2014, got the 14% back. That was the harvest control model.
Mm-hmm.
When the ASMFC started their approach in 2015 to do reductions, because there were 2 years above target fishing mortality rate, we spent hours telling them, don't cut us from 2013 levels, because we already cut in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an 8.5 hour meeting, and at about 8 hours, they were still saying, well, we'll cut from 2013. We said, no, that's unfair.
Mm-hmm.
So they cut us from 2012. So it cuts from a time period, at least when we have the big quota, but there's still 20% less than we had. But Mr. Jenkins makes some good points in that there is a school of management philosophy that says we're doing things wrong because we are taking out the stable part of the population. And we're leaving the unstable part. You know, he mentioned 12 inches. We're leaving the unstable part of the population alone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the most fish are.
Mm-hmm.
There's a pyramid.
Yep.
If you go through the ocean, it's a pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's something there. The ASMFC, though, in 1994, gave us a 20-inch size limit for 1995, 20 inches. We took a penalty of 4% so that we could have an 18-inch size limit.
Hmm.
That's why we were able to get 18.
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot of information there. There's a ton of information, but the problem is that we at least had some semblance of authority when we had the agreement among the three jurisdictions. And I mean, I've been bent out of shape about that since 2015.
Well, can I ask you a question? Have you ever approached or made a comment or written statement, anything, to the Secretary of Natural Resources or to the governor? During this
they're all relatively new, so the answer is no. But what we did was last year, the three jurisdictions that had support from Delaware and North Carolina, we asked for a 10% liberalization. We asked to be allowed to raise our quota 10% and allow the recreational fishery to have a different size of 20 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't get a vote. I mean, the vote was like 10 to 5.
Right.
Maryland came back this year and on their recreational fishery asked to go to 19, and that was approved. And I wasn't happy about that because originally Maryland was going to do that when we had a closed season in the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
They did it for the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
And they were supposed to have circle hooks, and at the last minute, the governor got a call from the charter industry saying we don't want to do circle hooks. We didn't do circle hooks.
Mm-hmm.
And among all that, there's a climate at ASMFC. We had New Jersey last year won a case where they were out of compliance, but the Secretary of Commerce said their plan's okay. That disrupted ASMFC. We had a Menhaden appeal, which wasn't heard. It was pulled before it was heard. You had that going on. You had a situation with a black sea bass appeal, which was settled at the table before it got to, you know, any other problems.
Mm-hmm.
And the Maryland situation, probably no one wanted to face another appeal. So ASMFC's a little bit different than what it was years ago. And, you know, it's tough, Mr. Jenkins, to do that. We'll certainly talk to the Secretary. You have talked to the Secretary. And I know you had a response. So,
I had a fun. I can't say I was happy over that because he lifted it up to Ron and y'all for the send the letter back, and I understand Ron, he didn't get the statements that I had sent verifying the size of fish that I was back at the end, but I mailed him some later and we talked. talked on the phone. Also talked with, I think it is a Mac Appleby with the Rockfish coordinator.
Max Appleman?
Yeah.
Max
Appleman. Yeah, I had a conversation with him. He didn't know what a block vote was. Rob just told you. 10-5 and all the states voted. I said, well, we can't get anything done because of a block vote. And he said, what is a block vote? So I asked him, was he familiar with the states along the Atlantic coast and how many of them were north of Virginia? And I think he figured it out. But anyway.
Huh? It's a block vote, all right. So, yeah, and in 1996, it took 3 meetings to get the Baywide quota established. We kept on getting block voted. But I guess the idea, JC, about the predation is that there will be, it looks pretty good in 2019, to have an ecosystem basis approach for many people. So, you know, that is sort of the closest we get, because all the models with predation have depended historically on big fish, striped bass, and weak fish. We know there aren't a whole lot of weak fish right now, there are many trout. But the other two are still a part of that, so that'll be fed in as well. So, and I think that's where we make strides forward, is by having an ecosystem approach. It's not going to be easy. Mm-hmm. It's going to be like going to kindergarten the first time around, and then building from there.
So my request is,
yes, sir,
as the Crab Advisory Committee, to make a request that we do something serious about the predation in the bay to save our crab industry. That's a viable industry, and the general public will certainly support that backing, because there's a lot of crab lovers out there that can't afford a $200 bushel crab. And Virginians would benefit from it, both the crab lovers as well as the commercial recreational fishermen. And we've had that. That's a part of our history, part of our heritage. And we shouldn't sit back and be silent about it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Rob, on the blue catfish thing, do you have any data that shows our landings have gone up or down since the new processing regs went in effect last September?
They were available last June when they had the blue catfish symposium. And I think all the jurisdictions provided data. I don't have them with me. I mean, for us, we went from several hundred thousand pounds to 2.6 million pounds. But we only show about 6 years of blue catfish because we did not disaggregate catfish as the whole quantity into a species-specific approach. So my suspicion is, you know, they've been around a long time. What's amazing to me, and Mr. Jenkins was there with me, it was really 2012 before all the, you know, the partner agencies said, hey, we need to start talking about blue catfish. And there's no doubt that, you know, they had already been amassing their territory. You know, it's been a big topic for this goal implementation team several times, and there's been several papers put out in work groups. And the Virginia Tech study, you know, really was upriver, but it did show predation. But I think what I worry about the most is that I think Mr. Jenkins is talking more about the pan-size striped bass, and even less as being the worst predators on these pellet crabs. Is that what you have indicated? It's really sort of the 16 inches narrow, and you know, they get 10 or 10 inches, something like that. And there's so many of them because they're the smallest, you know, the smallest part of the pyramid. They've got the most numbers.
Yeah, I'd say 14 to 20. Okay. They come short at times. I mean, I'm not a scientist, but. First week, 2 of May, we all believe with this, not getting off the subject, but just getting for rockfish to do. They come ashore because all these little red worms in the bottom, you see them when you're arching, you see them hanging, just they go, it's just a
she shakes her head in my favor. I think they come to the surface and they swim around in the water for what, a week, maybe?
I'm not from there.
Oh, you're not?
No, I'm just thinking of in my river right here.
Mm. Oh, yeah, on the lake, you see them right there by the thousands and thousands. Rockfish knows when that's happening, and they're going to show them feet on them.
Uh-huh.
Well, if they know when that little worm is swimming around, don't you think he knows when that little baby crab is?
Yes, sir.
Huh?
Yeah, it does.
I mean, I don't have a degree in science, but I've done just as much as observing and checking on things as these men just got on there. He doesn't work.
If we didn't have the blue catfish, maybe it would be enough crabs for everything, for the striped bass and the crabbers.
Yes, sir.
Rob, when is the next ASMFC meeting?
August.
That's a little early.
Early August.
Early, yeah. Do you meet once a year? Or?
No, we're meeting quarterly.
Quarterly, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, is that something, if I make a recommendation that we try to put forth a proposal for the purpose of accreditation, like Doug was talking about, is that something that you think is doable?
Well, I mean, it's certainly doable, but I think the way you would do it is to have a letter and get that to, just mentioned Max Appleman, as the coordinator.
Okay.
And then that could be provided however they want to provide it. I'm assuming they'll have a striped bass issue or two at that meeting.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, the way that can be put together.
Mm-hmm.
And there's certainly no harm in that because at least you get a chance to talk about it.
Right.
They get a chance to see it.
You know, get it out there, yeah.
But, you know, knowing everything that I know.
Going away.
Well, I mean, what happens at the ASMFC a lot of times is that when the public shows up, they say if there's anyone who wishes to speak about something that's not on the agenda, speak now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not being critical, it just seems like it doesn't carry any weight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they say thank you very much and then they go on to the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you have a letter, then that's there and that can be handed out even.
I mean, what is the general argument that the 20-inch fish is like a 3 to 4 year old fish and they have an opportunity to spawn?
Not that old.
Not that old, yeah.
No, you're still in the twos there. But the argument is they already figured out on the 18-inch for us, which we still 18 inches, that was fine. So you're a really small fish there. But on the recreational side, the 20-inch was the way that the recreational industry could say we've made a 20.5% reduction by going from 18 to 20 because we're leaving all these other fish less than 20 behind.
Okay.
You know, the practicality is different in commercial and recreational, but they both have similarities. I mean, commercial fishery, there's still some high grading that goes on there. And the recreational fishery, same way.
But on the jumping job, between 18 and 18 and 20 feet, That mean has increased all those times 160. That
Sure.
Yes, let's see. They're doing a stock assessment. It's, I'll call it a grand stock assessment. It's really called a benchmark stock assessment, where they bring in all the newest science, all the newest models, anything that they can find to make a benchmark assessment. That's going on this summer. We won't have the results probably until February. There probably won't be any decisions made until probably as late as August of 2019. But the ASMSC is focused on that. That is their focus. The window of opportunity was really, has really, you know, for getting liberalization or getting more quota or anything else, has passed. And it passed so badly that it's the first time that anyone can remember that the ASMSC refused to send out our request for a 10% increase in quotas and recreational opportunities, not even to the public. It didn't even get out to the public. That has never happened before. So it is an uphill battle all the way. That's just the way it is right now. The other thing is, and you know, if for some reason during the ASMSC meeting, if you get on the ASMSC website, now this isn't practical because you're working most of the time, but let's say you have a stomach ache one day. If you get on the ASMSC website, you can watch the webinar. You can watch the meeting. And you know, you can hear what's said, who says it, and everything else. And you can get a flavor for the ASMSC that way. Because, you know, going to Arlington is not something anyone can do easily, but you can look at the webinar. And again, I realize that's hard for you who are out there every day work with, but just wanted to mention that to you.
Okay.
You can actually listen to it on your phone.
Okay. All right.
That's good.
All right, we want to move to the next item on the agenda, then. Everybody ready for that?
And that'll be the fish pots in conjunction with the crab potting discussion.
So, Mr. Morris, stand up. There you are. This is something that you have interest in.
Yeah.
And I can give some background first, if you'd like, on what's going on.
Well, the way this law is now, we can only fish 30 of fish pots if we have one crab pot. I'd like to see it increase where we could fish more fish pots along with the crab pots. Anything that's going to halt the production, you know, catching these catfish is just, I think we need to kill all the catfish we can. And the way it is now, we can only fish a, you know, a certain amount of pots if we got out any crab pots at all. And I would like to see it increase, the percentage increased, or the rewrite the law with a description of the pot. I mean, most of the catfish pots are round, is where before when we done this, it was a lot of people out there fishing square mesh pots made like a crab pot to catch catfish, and they were catching crabs with. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that needed to be done then. But now I think we need to do something to change it so we can catch more of these catfish.
So, what this is about, in 2015, law enforcement sat on a site, and, you know, law enforcement can only give summons if they actually see the violation. You know, see it occur. So law enforcement sat for quite a while, and some individuals, they're in the lower area here, but I don't know exactly where at this point, I can't remember, but they sat for hours. And when they finally saw that individuals were taking crabs from the fish pots to the boat, to the truck, then they could issue the summons. And this was something law enforcement was very concerned of, because that was only one incident, you know, one incident which took quite a while to do anything with. And so the commission got the information, and the regulation was started March 1 of 2015. And it does state that depending on your fish pot license, you can only have 10% of that amount if you have a crab pot overboard, if you've set a crab pot. A maximum of 30, because the high-end fish pot license is greater than 300, but it got capped at 30. Law enforcement is still concerned. I talked to them today. They still have concerns about this. One of the things you said, Mr. Morris, which is a problem for fisheries, is we would have difficulty with defining what a certain fish pot might be because we've never had a fish pot definition. And in fact, if you look around the coast, the closest anyone comes to defining a fish pot is by defining what it is not, because a fish pot just is elusive as to what should be a fish pot. So I know you have good intentions. I think this is a tough one right now with what has gone on just a short time ago. The other part there is I don't know how much below you know, you are with your fishing, where you would be fishing in the York.
Well, I'm in the Rappahannock.
Oh, you are
the guys I do know are in the Rappahannock that are doing
so
this.
You know that there are upstream areas, right?
Yep.
So in talking to law enforcement, the idea was, and it was mutual, I mean, I had the thought too, if you really want to take out catfish, then go above the upstream areas and set as many fish pots as you know you're allowed to set and do the harvesting there. You know, and that, after I talked to you, I had to kind of look around and check everything out and go back to the time that we did the regulation, but you'd have to be above the 360 bridge in Tappahannock. So you get above there, set all the fish pots that your license allows. If you have over 300, set what you want. You can still set the 10% or up to 30 below. So that's at least my short-term offer on how to do this.
So what you're telling me is I got a 300 fish pot license. I could set 300 pots with my 255 crab pots out there.
If you're above
the bridge. As long as they're above the bridge.
Yep.
But I can still have 30 of them below the bridge.
That's right. That's right.
So y'all going to write that into law so I don't get a ticket for doing this?
It's already there the way it's written. So it talks about the, if I can for a second, I'll tell you. It talks about it's unlawful for any person to place, set, or fish any number of fish pots in excess of 10% up to a maximum of 30 fish pots when any person on that vessel has set any crab pots. Then it says this subsection shall not apply to fish pots set in the areas described in D1. Well, D1 are the upriver areas.
Okay.
Now, what you just said, though, is only one wrinkle. Do you have up to 300, or do you have over 300 license?
Over 300.
Okay, so, yeah, you'd be good to do your 30 and then get above the bridge and set a mess up there.
I can't set 300 of them. I can't handle the fish that come with 100 of them.
Okay.
But I would like to be able to set 75 or 80 of them in the fall.
This is the way that you can do it, and, you know, I think for the short term, that's the best solution.
Well, I'm satisfied with it.
Okay.
Mr. Jim.
Yes, sir.
What size mesh are you using these pots?
3-inch stretch or 2-inch. Some of it's 2-inch stretch.
Using galvanized pots?
They're net.
Okay. Net. So it's mesh.
But it's wire wrapped with net is what it is.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So Rob's explanation of the regulation, in fact, helps you to achieve what you want.
Sure.
Tells me that just eliminates it right there.
Okay. Sure, that's great. I love that.
Okay.
Yeah. So the regulation's already there.
Yeah, you did something good.
Well, that's good. You're fine that he
might that. That's the first time I've heard that in quite a while.
I didn't see you sitting down before.
Yeah, sit down before you, yeah.
Oh, me.
All right. Any old business? Staff input, members of the committee have anything they want to bring up?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir, down the end there.
If we're going to do the closure at the end, the bushel reduction, I mean, I wish, like, we could do something to not do it for the month of November, or if you got two people with a boat, let them stack the limit then to make up one of whichever one is bigger, because, I mean, you effectively kill the crab bot fishery. If oystering's good, you're a fool to stay out there and catch 29 bushels, or 27. Mine goes from 47 to 27, and, I mean, and then you just push all those crabbers onto the oyster rock that's already crowded, and, I mean, it would help all the crabbers keep our foothold in the market at that time of year. The crabs are good, and it hurts now because you can't, I mean, it's just the numbers don't work to stay crabbing when your limit gets cut.
Well, we'll have to work on something that no one can work on, which is getting more juveniles in the bay, because the whole reason about November is these crabs that you're going to face in the late summer and fall when the spawning stops for 2019. So the reason November was put the way it is in March as well is because it's a little bit of a buffer.
I understand, but if two boats are one boat, I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, I don't understand the difference. It just lasts. Well, people are allowed to do it on the same vessel, because that time of year, you don't need as many pots and stuff. You can catch both people's limit on the same boat. Your bait bill will be cheaper. Expenses will be cheaper. It would keep the fishery going versus being in two separate boats. I mean, the numbers just don't. I mean, you'd be a fool to stay doing it when you could go oystering.
I would say,
yeah.
I know that forces someone who has the higher pot limit to be by himself and everything else, but I think at this time it's going to be tough to get that main traffic on that at all. And I really do. The vessel limit and the bushel limits are only 4 years old.
Yeah, but I mean, I understand you don't want people stacking having 100 bushels on the boat, but I mean, they'd only, if you had two people, the maximum they'd still be allowed to have was 47. I mean, that. Yeah, I mean, that would actually be a cut, 27 to 27 or whatever. I mean, it just seems like to me, I don't understand if I understand you don't, I get it all summer long. I understand completely. I understand, but when the limit's cut back, I just don't see. I mean,
if you're willing to send me an email exactly how you want this to be, we have a regulatory review committee. It's not going to happen now. We have a regulatory review committee, and that contains Marine Police and all the other divisions as well. So I think that's the way that I would rather approach this, because, you know, again, what all the jurisdictions in the Bay said was pretty much leave things the way they were last year. The only chancy part of that, if there is such a thing, is the fact that we still are low on the juveniles. And, you know, we've been in better shape on juveniles. But not as bad as last year. Did not really pay attention to the juveniles, because we know that Mother Nature tells us how many juveniles we'll have in a bay. But once they're here, we should pay attention to them. That's what we've been doing since 2014.
I mean, if we had the numbers on how many people are even left crabbing that time of year, I mean, a lot of the places shut down. I mean, is it really that many people? I mean, and you're going to have, people are going to be out there working anyway. The crabbers are
250 to 260 harvesters.
So if they're working by themselves, the chances of all of them getting in the boat together is not that great. But I'm just saying it would keep them. I don't see how it would amount to that many crabs, really, for 30 days of harvesting. If the guys are going to be there, just allow them to make more money, make it profitable, and keep them out of the other fisheries. I don't see how it would really amount to more crabs any kind of way. Now, and I mean, I understand not doing it in the springtime because you don't want people getting the market down before. I get that. They don't want to do it in the spring. They don't want to do it all summer. I'm 100% in agreement. But the fall time of year has traditionally been built on, you kind of got to catch some stuff. I mean, you're usually able to, but you have to be able to have enough to cover gas and bait and crew.
Some people I've talked to are happy with the November bushel. You know why? Because they're oystering?
I don't think price is an issue.
When I talked about the fact that maybe the situation rate can increase again, don't count me in on that. Well, a couple people told me that.
We're getting the same thing for them in the winter fall as we get right now, so I don't see where the.
You know, it's day. You know, we have a captain of law enforcement in our regulatory force, which was a
He would see where I'm coming from, I'm sure.
He leased up a lot.
Money-wise or catch-wise?
So, yeah, those crabs carry forward into the summer pretty good, and then you wait for the fall for these crabs to do them. So, I mean, I'm glad that you have something to share with me on it, but I think right now, let's work on it and make it something that we can look at. But, you know, bring it up.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I want to talk about the lower bay sanctuaries, possibly opening up the ocean. Do you?
What do you want to do?
I want to open up the off Virginia Beach this year.
Yeah.
Are we going to discuss that?
We should have slides on that.
Oh, I've been bugging everybody.
This is a four-year program.
Absolutely.
Speaking with Mr. Sanford, he described some potential areas to open up to the blue crab sanctuary areas, three right here at the mouth of the bay and four along the coast of Virginia. So this is one proposed area outlined in green to potentially open up for the sanctuary areas to commercial crabbing. This proposed area is 9 square miles. It starts 300 feet out from the shore where the Cape Henry Lighthouse is and extends a quarter of a mile up the Colregs line and then out to the Chesapeake Bay entrance lighted whistle buoy CH and then down the oceanfront and then back in. This is around what would be, I believe, 42nd Street, if 42nd Street existed, or 41st Street. It goes straight from 40th to 42nd. Or one of them is missing, but it's right where the Cavalier Hotel is.
I think it's 45th.
Is it 45th? Okay, I apologize. And then it ends leaving 300 feet between where the area would stop and the shoreline of the beach would begin. So, and then this would kind of stay off the shoreline everywhere, 300 feet. And then the second proposed area is a little smaller. It's 5.1 square miles, and it's about the same, except instead of coming straight down, it just goes down to that point in Virginia Beach at 45th Street. So those are kind of the two proposed areas that we have mapped out to potentially open.
You want me to comment on this?
Mm-hmm.
But basically what it comes down to, we just don't have any place to crab in Lynn Haven. The Lower Bay Sanctuary or Historical Sanctuary goes right to the shoreline, and we're just looking for an area to go so we can basically alleviate the overcrowding in the Lynn Haven River. This is an area that probably two or three crabbers will go to for a very short time, and we just want a place to go. I don't know how staff feels about it.
would this be a recommendation that y'all are capable of doing this year?
Well, my thought is it's okay to send this out to public here.
Right. Gotcha. So what do you say we just keep that area closed and go ahead and lift the sponge crab wall?
Hell yeah. There you go.
Like we originally planned in 2007. But here's another thing, too. I mean, I hear Rom all the time talking about what can you give me? What kind of, you know, what kind of...
Trade-off.
Exactly. I mean, I've got the perfect trade-off. Take area... Is that three, the upper part of that Sanctuary 3? Close that year-round.
We know the history of the coastal area is what you say it is.
Right.
We know that two or one harvester...
Very minimal.
...through time was about it. So, you know, that is true. We know we just changed the dates.
That helps.
Time period there. It would. Well.
Everything helps.
I think this is a public hearing item to recommend to the commission to send it out if the committee feels that way.
Right.
But
I mean,
I don't know yet, you know, how this was stacked up.
Yeah.
I think what's going to happen with the staff advice is that we already have given the recommendations on everything to the commission. That was mailed out today.
Uh-huh.
So then there'll be a report on this meeting, and it will include the committee wants it.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I'd like to see the first area, actually, now that I'm looking at it. I mean, either one of these is fine. We just need an area to go to. That would be preferred by me. The second one is the other option. I have no problem with any of these. Anything helps. We just don't have any place to go.
Right.
I mean, that's the reality of it. We don't.
Mr. Cox.
Mr. Chairman, many years ago, Rob, if you remember, down my way, the sanctuary went from the shoreline all the way down, and I got that change. And the way I did that, I got it back open again, is I gave up areas outside and made the sanctuary larger, which should, what Mark mentioned, to gain a little, give up some more. That's how I got the sanctuary changed home. I was willing to give up three times as much area as that I got back in return. I think that's a good calling card. If you'll let me have this, I'll give you that in return. And that worked for me.
And if you look at the overall area that you I mean, that's a large area, period, that you took away, all the way to the Carolina line and all the way up to Smith Island Light.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we just want a very small area, 9 square miles, or 5.9 square miles with very small harvester use. There's not going to be conflict with anybody. That was the reasoning behind the 300-foot line off the beach. You know, we don't want to be in there having any kind of conflict at all. None. So,
yeah, put that in a motion for hearing.
Yeah,
You're going to make what? You make a motion?
Yeah, I can make a motion. I'd like to make a motion that, I guess the best way to do it is try to open up that map there, the square one, which is 9 square miles.
Proposal 1.
Okay. And need be, give up
Sanctuary 3, which would be the northern sanctuary across the mouth of the bay. Year-round, for a year-round closure.
I'll second that.
All right. Any discussion on the, Mr. Moore?
You know, we've tried to make sure we were balanced. Can you provide data, or can your staff provide data that if we go forward with that, that it's a equal trade-off?
The only thing I would know to do, and staff might have a different way of looking at it, but I think we're looking at what kind of harvest is taking place
in Area 3.
Overall, we know it's taking place in Area 4, which has been very rural.
Well,
I think it really comes down to spawning potential. Mm-hmm. And that's not something that we can do, but that's something that obviously came out in 2007, and it's included in the commission's packet that was mailed out. It's an excerpt from that meeting. So I think that's what we're talking about. Initially said it was good to do this, and then came back and said, now that you've thought about it, there's a lot of spawning potential there, and that could impact the bay and everything else. And then he came back and said a pilot program, right?
Right.
Those are the three.
Right. So he didn't have a problem. He just wanted to see a pilot program, more or less. I mean, as far as, you know, I'm gonna leap way back. You know, I said year-round closure for that area. Well, I can tell you back in the 80s, we would go down there crab dredging, and I have faith that we're going to have a crab dredge season sooner or later. If it's a year-round closure, you're not going to have crab dredging there, is where I'm going to go with that, as far as your, you know, your activity. I mean, we used to dredge down there, and there was a lot of crabs harvested there back in the 80s and 70s. So,
I think the committee wants us to go forward.
All right. So we call for the question. All in favor? Say
aye. One other question, Martin. I noticed if you do have a closure in 3, proposal 1 actually goes into 3. So would it have to be an adjustment on the northern boundary of that? If you could blow that up, you can see it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Probably goes a half a mile into.
Into.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would assume that would be considered another.
Top it down. Yeah.
Well, no, I want to keep it where it is. But uh-huh. They would reclassify that area as say Sanctuary 6 or whatever is what I'm getting at.
That sounds reasonable.
It'd be totally
because it does overlap.
Separated.
3 and 4.
I don't know.
5 now, so yeah.
I mean, yeah.
We can figure that out.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Right. But the area not in the green to the north would be closed year round.
Right.
Yeah.
All
good
right.
Point. I didn't even think about that.
All right. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, say no. Unanimous. All right. Anything else for the good of the cause? So can we call ourselves adjourned?
Motion to adjourn.
All right. All in favor?
All right.
All right.
You might spend the night here, but don't.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Lord, I can't get up now. I'm getting old.
More important things to be around.
Yeah, you did.
No, I said I would support it. I said I wouldn't do it.
Yeah. You too.
I'd love to. You.
Good to see you, Marsh.
Yeah, taking you 2 hours, you know.
Let me fix that. I could be.
I don't know.
Her driving? Yeah, she got her damn face. I'm sure. King Charles in there ever was. 2%.